Welcome to the Jill Dorks Dorky Discourse on Sex, Dating, and Masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and my mom once asked me how big my friend with benefits dick was while we were out to dinner together at a very nice pub. So that was weird. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and porn maker, and that is just so much. That is...
Yeah, I mean, there was a eyebrow wiggle and the whole thing.
Of course there was.
I don't know. Like, I think she was like half joking. I don't think that she really expected me to answer. And I was like, it's good. It works for me. Pretty awkward. Let's just change the subject very quickly to something else. Yeah, so we're doing an episode this week that's about sexuality and relationships as they relate to family, which is a really big topic. So maybe it'll be more than one episode because there are just so many questions to answer. It's a very complicated dynamic, but let's get into some of these listener questions. This one has happened to me before. What should I do if my parents don't like my new boyfriend?
Well, I mean, that depends a lot on both your relationship with your parents and your relationship with your boyfriend.
It also depends on why they don't like him. Because, like, I've had experiences where if my parents didn't like someone, it turned out that it was for a pretty legit reason. Like, they thought that he was disrespectful or they didn't like that he, like, made me cry on one occasion, and then it ended up being that he would make me cry, like, much more often as time went on, stuff like that.
Right. Well, like, I mean, this comes down to a question of, are your parents, do they have opinions which you value and trust? How well do they know you? How good a judge of a partner of yours are they? Right? If they are a person, you know, similarly to your friends who you're like, no, they know me really well. And like, they've seen a lot of my relationships in the past. They understand what I value in my relationships, what I'm looking for in my partnerships. And they don't like your new partner. Well, then, yeah, the same way I would say, listen to your friends. I would say, listen to their concerns. Can you see echoes of that in the person you think of as your partner? Because, like, we're probably talking about an NRE situation here where, like, your things are very new and they are very shiny, and there's a lot of things that you just sweep to the side or don't notice or have that kind of perception filter on them that you just filter them out of what you're seeing in this person. And the people who are close to us can highlight them, like you were saying, and can point out, like, hey, this person doesn't seem to value the same things you do, or doesn't seem to be, you know, want the kind of future you want, or any of those things. If, however, your parents are not people who you feel know you particularly well, or are people who are inclined to be very protective and see no one as good enough, then you, I mean, in any of these instances, you have the right to say, this is my partner, not yours. You don't have to approve of everyone I date. And if they can't be civil in the same room as this person, well, then that's a whole other conversation you got to deal with. And you have to make some decisions about who you're going to spend your time with and how. And that sucks. And no one should be forcing you to do that. But I think the big main question is there judgment one that you value and want to consider in making decisions in your life?
Yeah, I've had situations where it helped to provide some more information that my parents wouldn't necessarily know about someone. Like, for example, this is not a real thing that happened to me, but if I was dating someone who was really involved in, like, abolitionist politics, or someone who, like, maybe had ADHD and maybe, like, you know, those are not the same thing at all, but I'm trying to think of traits where, like, my parents wouldn't necessarily understand why they were acting the way that they were acting or why they believe what they believe. And so in those cases, it might be helpful to provide more information. Like, hey, that time that you thought my friend was being, or my boyfriend was being rude to you, he actually was dealing with this particular, like, I don't know, symptom of some condition or something. And I mean, not that that, ex- not that that excuses being rude. I'm not awake yet, friend.
no, but I get what you're saying, where, yeah. like, you can provide context for an experience they may have had, or, right, like, they may think that, you know, you mentioned ADHD, they may think that someone forgetting to, you know, make a phone call or showing up late on occasion is, like, this big sign of disrespect, and you exactly, can say, hey, it's exactly. this thing that we've talked about, and... like, I understand that timeliness just isn't their strength. They just don't have a great perception of time. And we've discussed it, and it's not a thing that's a problem for me, so it shouldn't be a problem for you. Right. Yep.
You said that so much better than I said.
I got what you were getting at.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Thank you. If you want to make some kind of concerted effort to sort of heal this relationship... which I definitely understand, especially if you intend to be with this person for a long time. Mm-hmm. You could arrange like a sit down conversation, not necessarily like, let's work out the fact that you dislike him, but just like, you know, hang out. Maybe he comes over for dinner and maybe you're going to equip him with the information he needs to make a good impression, or, whether it's a first impression or a second impression or what have you. In terms of, like, don't do this thing because this really pisses off my mom, and, like, make sure to shake my dad's hand firmly because he thinks less of people who don't do that, and avoid this touchy subject, you know, whatever. And that could potentially help. It really depends on the situation, though. Okay. This listener asked, how do I come out as a sex worker to my slut-shaming mom? This is rough. It really probably depends on what kind of sex worker you are, which sucks, but it probably does. But in this situation, what I've done for the, you know, online forms of sex work that I've done when I wanted to bring it up with my mom was do the trick that we always talk about, which is bringing it up from an indirect angle. Like if there's a sex worker in something that you're watching together, you could be like, what do you think about that? Or you could be like, God, sex work is such a maligned profession that is so hard to navigate. Or like, I read this news article about how life's really hard for sex workers these days because of XYZ. XYZ is Sesta Fosta, in case I didn't say that there. You know, and then and kind of get an idea. Because just because someone is slut-shaming does not necessarily mean that they'd be anti-sex work. Although probably it does. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think if you're already concerned about this, like, you know your mother and her opinions on these kinds of things. I think how you have this conversation is going to depend a lot on where you want this conversation to go and what you're hoping to get out of it. Because... why are you telling your mother? And this is not to say that you shouldn't or don't have to, but what is your goal with this? You should know that going in, I do think, as much as I'm trying to avoid saying shoulds. I do think it's helpful to know going in, do you want her support? Is that a thing that feels even achievable, that you want her, like, seal of approval, you want to feel, you know, approved of in her eyes, which is a totally valid thing for us to want from our parents. Is it you're just tired of hiding it and that's just really inconvenient talking around this anytime someone brings up work and you just really need her to have this conversation and you never need to talk about it again and that's just fine because you might go about that conversation a little bit differently. So I think if you just need her to have the information, you can fully say, like, this is what I'm doing and I'm willing to answer certain questions about it, but if you're going to give me shit about it, I don't want to hear it, and I just don't want to talk about it at all. Like, you have this information now. Here are some resources where you can look some things up. I don't need to do the rest of this. If you're looking for more approval, then I would go in prepared to answer a lot more questions that are probably going to be frustrating and feel like stupid questions, but... the more patient you can be while answering them, the easier I think it is for your mother to become comfortable with this idea. You're also going to want to decide if this is a conversation you want to have in person or not. Think about how your mother responds to quote unquote bad news or surprises. If this is a thing that you could write in a letter or an email or a text and say, here is a bunch of information, when you're done thinking about this and processing this and ready to come to me without some kind of explosive whatever, I'm happy to have this conversation with you, and this is what I need it to look like. Because I know for me, when I'm telling someone something scary, sometimes the scariest thing is the thought of the look on their face as I'm saying it, right? Their initial reaction.
Yeah.
And getting it in writing can kind of sidestep that, especially if your mother is the kind of person who is going to react to a shock by yelling or crying or being, you know, just a deeply emotional response that you have neither the time or energy to deal with. You can kind of sidestep that and say, like, listen, this is what I expect from you. This is what I'm afraid is going to happen in this conversation. This is the kind of conversation I'd love to have. Come to me when you're ready for that final one, and I'm happy to talk to you more about this. But I do think going into that conversation, you will also want to have thought about why you do sex work, what it provides for you, why you feel comfortable in it, the ways you keep yourself safe. That's probably a question your parents are going to have.
Yeah.
Do you feel safe? Does this fuel some kind of passion for you? Has it given you access to some financial thing that you have not been able to achieve before? Like, what draws you to this? And be able to speak to that. Ideally in a way that also feels familiar to the person that they know as their kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sound like you, and also talk about this extra part of your life.
Yeah, I think that's a really good suggestion, because I think a lot of the reason that some people don't want their kids to become sex workers is because they have this stereotype in their heads that sex workers are automatically disempowered, don't make enough money, are like allowing people to disrespect their bodies. Maybe they have a conception that sex workers are all like addicted to drugs. I mean, there's all kinds of like terrible stereotypes that people have about sex workers. In addition to that, I think it would be useful to know if there is a specific reason why your mom is against slutting it up or sex work. Like, because if it is, you know, STIs, you can pretty easily explain why that's not an issue or how you take care of that. If it's like worries about your physical safety, you can talk about that. If it's I think for a lot of people, it's like a second wave feminist kind of thing of like believing that it's disempowering. And there's, of course, so much scholarship out there about, you know, directly from sex workers talking about how either it is empowering to them, or like, we don't hold other jobs to the standard of needing to be empowering in order to be valid jobs. So there's a lot of resources out there, but I think it would really help to know like specifically what their issue is with it.
And like, your mom might not know what her issue is with it.
That's true.
This may be a moment that's helpful for you to actually ask a lot of questions. If your mother is going to be combative and is going to talk about, you know, well, you're disrespecting your body, how do you see that? Like, can you explain to me where you see that come from? Like, if you can unpack her thought process with her a little bit, not necessarily to be argumentative, like, yeah, well, prove it, right? But just to have like, I don't see that. Can you explain your thinking? Like, that is not my experience of it. And so you can kind of get to the root of, she may be able to, if she's willing to have that conversation with you and think about it with you, she may pick apart her thinking herself, right? Like, I've asked my mother strategic questions when talking about transness with her and had her be like, oh, so like this thing. And I'll be able to be like, yeah. And just, she'll relate to something in her life that I never would have made that connection. But she would, because I was asking her the questions and to see like, well, have you ever had this experience in your life? So you may be able to help your mom through it that way. You may also be helpful to kind of have in your back pocket a couple of cute stories about sex work. A couple of like funny stories that make it feel like a job, because like, I don't know, your mom has probably worked some sort of customer service job or something else that looks like sex work, right? Something about, because there are certainly parts of sex work that are just customer service, right? Yeah. That are just being friendly to strangers. So if you have any stories that you can just ground it and make it feel like just another silly job, right? Can you talk about fighting with tech issues or something? because it's really going to humanize it. I think a lot of people have this really exotic idea of sex work that it's not just, and you know, the day to day, often it is just another job. And I also know, especially if you do full service, a lot of people have really intimate connections with their clients. And there are people who are like really sweet and cherished relationships in their lives, even though it is paid. So also, if you have any stories like that in your life, anyone who's just been really sweet or kind or giving to you any encounters that you wouldn't have experienced outside of sex work, it may also, again, help to just humanize your day-to-day experience of your job and help your mom or whoever you're talking to see kind of the benefits and the things this does to feed you as well, aside from literally feeding you.
Right. I've found it sometimes a bit of a light bulb moment for people when I compare sex work to other body-based professions. Dancer, masseuse, actor, athlete. There are tons of jobs where you're using your body to achieve certain goals and to get paid. And I think that people have this like lazy assumption that sex work is somehow different, and it really is not. And sometimes that's been helpful for me in explaining that to people.
Yeah.
All right. Another coming out question. Does my family need to know I'm polyamorous? If so, how should I navigate that? This really depends, but because you use the word polyamorous, probably, yes, they do need to know. If you were just non-monogamous, like you had a open relationship and you were like fucking people on the side who you would never bring to like a family Christmas dinner, like I don't think that you need to tell them. You can if you want to, but I don't think it's as important as like what I've heard from folks in like multiple ongoing relationships who like do have to or do want to bring those partners with them to events or to be able to at least, and find it really hurtful when those partners are excluded. So what's your advice on this?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to do shit. Like, your parents don't need to know a goddamn thing about you. They don't need to see you if you don't want them to. However, if they are in your life, there are certainly some things worth considering. When deciding if you're going to come out to them, I think you're right. A big question is, like, what does your polyamory look like? Is there someone that's going to, like, be coming to dinner for Christmas? Is there someone that you're going to want to bring? Is there someone who's just going to be a major function in your life? Then, yeah, I think it's worth letting them know. I don't know. Honestly, I guess it's going to depend on your parents. If it's more helpful to tell them when you have multiple, like, serious relationships going on or not, right? I'm not out to my parents because it hasn't super come up, but it's getting more awkward because my meta plays a pretty prominent part in my life. And thus far, we keep telling stories and being like, and Ash's plucky roommate was also there. Yes. Like you moved across states and just kept the roommate. Yes. We like him a lot with same roommate. Yes. That's how this happened. And we share a car with him. Yes, we do.
It's like in that movie, Happiest Season, that all the queers hated were like, she's lying to her parents about who her girlfriend is. And I think she does just call her roommate. And it's like, ooh, like, I get why you would do that. But there are a lot of people who would find that extremely hurtful, which is why, like, you want to come out about this stuff potentially.
Right, exactly. And, like, my meta thinks it's funny because he has no reason to be meeting my parents. However, if I had another partner, like, meeting parents is a significant thing, right? And it would feel weird to not be able to bring them home simply because my parents know Ash. Like, So I am at a point where, like, it just, the conversations would be exhausting and practically it wouldn't make sense. And, like, I could mention it to my dad, sure. But, like, my parents are probably the type that would, like, take that knowledge and think of it as some big abstract thing and file it away and never think about it again. And then I'd bring another partner home and they'd be like, what?
Yeah.
So for me, it doesn't seem to make sense to come out until, like, it is becoming inconvenient and there are parts of my life I'm hiding. Another thing worth considering is how likely are they to stumble upon this information?
Mm.
Do you have another partner that you post about online? Are you active on dating apps that, I don't know, a cousin or someone might run into you because you live near a lot of family, right?
Yeah, that would be awkward.
If it's going to trickle out that maybe you've hooked up, that, like, you're looking to hook up with other people, or some, you know, you live in a small town and someone's going to see you on a date with someone that is not the partner that you're public with.
Mm-hmm.
I do think you should tell your parents, because I do think, again, they're not entitled to any information, but I would rather kind of cut that off at the pass than create this rumor mill that I am cheating or being unfaithful, or create some impression that my partner doesn't know what's going on and they mm-hmm. will think they caught me in something that I don't want to be accused of doing, because I make a lot of really conscious efforts to do this ethically.
Yeah, that reminds me of when Matt has told me about, like, wondering what their doorman thinks of bringing back different people. The thing that I said to my mom that really helped her get polyamory, I think, although, you know, I don't think she ever, like, will fully get it, because I do feel like you have to, like, know a bunch of poly people and, like, be in it to, like, really, really mm-hmm. understand it. But I said to her, like, because she has two kids, me and my brother. And I was like, you don't love either of your kids more than the other, right? And she was like, no, I love them both so much.
I don't know. You're the phone. You're the wallpaper on the computer is the thing. I don't know.
Not right now. Actually, her current wallpaper is a photo of herself, which I think is very funny and aspirational.
No, that tracks. Okay, anyway.
Yeah. But she really doesn't love either of us right. more. And so when I said that to her, she was like, oh, because I think a lot of people, I mean, it's strange, but we do put this, like, special emphasis on romantic relationships in our culture as being, you know, requiring a different status. But when you think about multiple kids or having multiple friends, that's easy to envision. So
mm-hmm.
that can be helpful for folks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Got a couple of questions about helping out little sister, which I enjoy. These sisters mm-hmm. are gonna be all right. One person is saying, I'm pretty sure that my little sister is queer, but she hasn't come out to me yet. Should I preempt uh-huh. that conversation? I always find it kind of surprising when people do this. Like, I've seen a couple, like, viral social media posts where, like, someone wrote a note to their either sibling or kid being like, hey, I know you're gay, I just want you to know that I'm okay with it. And that's actually what happened to me. My mom saw my interested in on Facebook had changed to men and women, and I was gathering the courage to come out to her as bi when I was 15, and she wrote me a note about it, and I actually found that really embarrassing. Like, I know that I'm very, very lucky to have a family who's accepting, but I found it in some ways very embarrassing to have that be preempted, because I was, like, gathering my courage to, like, phrase it in a way that I wanted to phrase it. And I don't know, I just felt like it was a little bit, stealing my thunder and happened a little bit sooner than I would have wanted. Mm-hmm. So personally, I wouldn't advise you to preempt it, but I mean, you know your sister better than we do. What do you
yeah.
think?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I feel like, I mean, first of all, what if you're wrong? Like,
right.
that's a whole other thing, right? Like, you can think you know a thing. What if you're wrong?
Yeah.
And yeah, I think you're right. I think the process of coming out to the people around us is, I think it's made up of more than just gathering the courage to say a thing to someone.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a process of figuring out, what you need to say and how and what language rings true, and the decision of telling other people for a lot of things for me is like a decision of making things real, and people can be toying around with a lot of like ideas and things, but like choosing to come out is a degree of commitment, right? Mm-hmm. Because people can be the most accepting people in the world. And sometimes it's hard to go, you know, that thing I told you, it's a different thing now. Because it can feel like I was wrong, and that's not a thing anyone ever likes to say.
Yeah, and it can also feel like you're going to keep changing it over and over again forever, and your family might be like, okay, so you're bisexual this week, but you were lesbian last week. Okay, like, yeah, it's just...
Right.
It can be messy.
So there's a lot of fear around coming out. And I think conquering that fear for ourselves and with the help of the people we choose to involve in that process is like an important part of queerness and an important part of understanding ourselves and the importance of who we are. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't recommend making that decision for someone else. Like, mm-hmm. It feels kind of like the way you just got, like, embarrassing, but also kind of like shoving someone into the deep end of the pool.
Yeah.
Like, I saw you were toying with the idea of bisexuality. So you're bisexual now, huh? Like,
I think it could also be panic inducing in a way if like you are trying to hide a thing because you're not ready to own up to it. And then someone mm-hmm. is just like, I can totally see that you're that thing. And you're like, what? Can everyone see? Like, ugh.
And how have I not seen for this long? Wait, I've been checking. How do you know?
Right.
It can be a lot. All of that said, like, be not uncomfortably loud, but loud about the fact that, like, you support queer folks, that you have yep. queer friends, that you, like, are involved in these issues. Don't be the person whistling through the house like, gosh, I love so many gays. There are just so, if there were a gay in this house, I would be fine with that gay, wouldn't I? While just, like, staring at them. Like, don't be that guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're walking around, like, you know, if you see... There is enough stuff in the news right now. There are enough queers on TV. You should probably have some queer friends that you can bring up in conversation. If you don't, maybe you're not a great ally for your sister in this moment, honestly. Like, and maybe you shouldn't be the one starting this conversation, honestly. Like, go find some queer folks to be friends with before. You know, maybe you're queer. Have you come out to her? Can you talk about, like, your own experiences? Mm-hmm. You can definitely make it clear that you are a safe person to have this conversation with when they are ready, but I would recommend waiting until they are ready.
I completely agree. I think the best thing you can do in this situation is establish yourself as a person who it's safe to come out to. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, you can even walk right up to the line and wait for them to cross it, like the kiss in Hitch. mm-hmm. Not that you should be kissing your little sister. Okay, that's weird. But, you know, you can... My parents actually said to me a lot when I was young, like, whenever there was a gay character on TV, my mom would be like, just so you know, being gay is totally cool, and we will love you no matter what and no matter who you turn out to be. Like, she would just really mm-hmm. make that clear. And that's a bit heavy-handed, of course. At the time, I was just kind of, like, rolling my eyes, like, okay, mom, whatever. But, like, mm-hmm. that actually really did help me a few years later when I was considering coming out. So anything you can do to establish that comfort and safety is good.
Right, because if your kid is... Your queer kid hears everything you say about queer folks is yes. the thing. Like, just a slight tangent here. And if the only, like, if you do not explicitly say you are comfortable with it, they are hearing everything else you say that says you aren't, right? Mm-hmm. Or the lack of talking about it alone says that you aren't. So just yeah. take opportunities to reinforce that, to just have it as a ambient part of their life. And it will feel like... I mean, it will still feel like a big deal, but it will feel like less of a big deal when it is time to have that conversation for them.
Yep. Another little sis question. I want to make sure my little sister, who recently became sexually active for the first time, always has access to condoms, lube, etc. How can I ensure this without making her feel awkward? I had a friend in high school whose dad was really, really cool and sex positive. And what he did was he put a basket in a specific place under the sink in one of the bathrooms. And he was like, I'm going to check this every so often and restock it with condoms as needed. No questions asked, just so you know, which is so brilliant because it's so much better than just leaving your kid to fend for themselves on these like really crucial items. I know that it could be a little bit awkward, but I actually think this is a situation where that might be better than not doing it at all. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't know how you know that she's sexually active. I wouldn't disclose that you know unless she has sat down and said, hey, so I'm fucking my new boyfriend. In which case, like, yeah, you can say, hey, I know that you're doing these things and blah, blah, blah. But I do love that idea of being like, hey, these exist in this place for, like, totally free. And I'm, like, barely going to look at it. And, like, we never have to speak about the fact that this exists again. But, like, it exists right here. I think the mild, like, if it's going to be awkward, it is worth a sentence of awkwardness to be like, it exists. I will get if you ever need it, this, you know, they're here.
What if you put them with a box of like tampons and pads and some other stuff so that it was less awkward? So that you're just like, I keep this stuff here. If you ever need any of it, you can take it.
Yeah, no, I think that would be smart. Just like a little, I don't know, like a drawer with all of those sorts of things. I don't know. I'm thinking like toiletry type stuff and any like little handy things that you might need. And just saying like, hey, this all lives here. Because I think, especially if you live with your sister. Yeah.
Yeah. If you don't live with her, it's maybe a bit more complicated. Let me think about that for a second.
I mean, it can exist in your house and she can be a person who comes and visits you.
It's true. Like, that same friend of mine in high school, her dad also once drove her to a sex shop that was like a good, you know, feminist, female-owned sex shop and parked outside and was like, I'm just going to chill here. You can go in. And I think he like gave her some money and just was like, get what you want. And I think she ended up buying a vibrator, but that would be cool if they're up for that.
Right. You can simply be a person who is like, you know, hey, I am available to acquire these things for you if you ever need them. And just kind of put yourself there for that. Although that does then kind of require them to say, hey, so I need some more of that. The other rule is like, if you set this up as, like, no questions asked or, like, I can be the person to get these for you or whatever, you don't then get to be like, so, hey, was he hot? Like, oh, who you playing with? Like, I noticed a lot of them are missing. Like, you can think you're saying, like, cute, coy, sassy, funny things. Just don't draw attention to it because that's just going to embarrass them.
Yeah, that's going to make them not
depending on your relationship
do it anymore. Another thing I thought is, like, if you really don't want to be awkward about it, you could buy some good condoms and some good lube and be like, hey, I got these, but they're not actually working out for me. Like, I don't know, maybe the sizing is wrong or it's not the type of lube you want or whatever. Make up something. And do you want them? And I don't know. It's so hard with teenagers to not make them feel awkward because everything is embarrassing and awkward at that age. But I mean, she needs condoms and lube probably. So I admire that you're trying to do this. This is not an advice question, but actually just a thought-provoking question for us. What do you think should be imparted to most kids in sex education or the sex talk that isn't already? And my big answer for this is kink, which is really controversial. Like, even talking to folks in sex ed, a lot of them are like, oh, I don't know. Because there's an implication that if you teach kids that people hit each other for pleasure, that they're going to start hitting each other, to which I say, I mean, yeah, if they're into hitting each other, cool. Like, I don't know what the problem is there. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think kink would be a great addition. Just like the basics of that it is a thing that exists in the world that you can learn more about, that, you know, I think pleasure is a big one, that sex is just a thing that can and probably should feel good for most people. That if it doesn't, you don't have to do it. And I think also discussions of queerness and gender. Like, if anything, you, like, at this point, yes, we know queer people exist, but I would honestly add, like, bits of queer history and queer culture. I forget who I first heard talking about this, but it really stuck with me. This idea that queers are one of the few marginalized communities that need to go find their elders. They aren't born into their community. They need to seek it out. And I think in some sort of, like, structured sex education curriculum, should have, you know, the teacher should be pointing at the path that the student can walk down to go find their elders and their history and their community. They should say, the teacher should be creating the sign and saying, these communities exist. This is what there is to know about them. And, like, kind of pointing kids where they need to go, similarly to the way I think they can do with kink, where this is a thing that, like, if you're drawn to these ideas, there are ways to play with them that are safe and communities that are working, you know, to encourage that and educate around that and create spaces for that and go find them. If, you know, when you turn 18, if that is a thing that feels appealing, rather than leaving folks to just stumble into it on their own.
Yeah, and I think the main reason to teach about a lot of these things is so the kids don't feel broken and alone. Like, I know several people who grew up with a fetish or feeling that they were trans even really early on or various other things, where if they had known that it was okay, they would have, you know, realized it or come out about it much sooner. On the topic of pleasure, though, there was only, like, two mentions ever of the clitoris in, like, all the sex ed I ever took in school. And I think that's a shocking, like, shameful omission, given that it's the anatomical equivalent to the penis, pleasure-wise. And we talk way more about the penis because of its reproductive aspects, but also because of systemic sexism. And there are I see them all the time. Every day I see people having the problem of, like, I'm trying to come from PIV and it's not happening and I feel broken and what's wrong with me and why isn't it happening? I think as sex educators, we sometimes get a little bit insular and forget how many people actually don't know that clit stimulation is required for most people with vulvas to get off. And if that was established in sex ed for everyone, girls and boys and everyone else, people's sex lives would be absolutely transformed. The other thing is asexuality, though. For similar reasons to talking about queerness and transness. When I've interviewed asexual people, almost all of them have expressed some version of the sentiment of, like, I didn't identify as ace until later in life because I didn't know it was a thing. And I thought I was just frigid or traumatized or fucked up or gay or, you know, whatever. And it needs to be positioned as a perfectly valid sexual orientation alongside all the others because it is.
There, similarly to that, there are so many trans folks that I talk to, like, you ask them, when did you know you were trans? And I think cis folks expect, you know, trans women to be like, yes, well, you know, I did always love playing with Barbies and things, right? And, like, so often we say, when did you know you were trans? And the answer is, when I met a trans person and someone said trans people exist. And I went, oh.
Right, exactly. It's such a beautiful thing. And it would be so wonderful if it could happen a lot earlier for a lot of people.
Right.
I mean, it reminds me of the thing about how, like, high school math will teach you about fucking, like, quadratics and shit, but not about how to do your taxes. Like, I don't actually need to know what the vas deferens is. That piece of information has never once been useful to me. It's, like, an interesting piece of trivia to know, I guess. But all the internal reproductive stuff, I just need to know the very basics of how that happens. I don't really need to know all the anatomy, but it's shocking that that stuff is taught so explicitly and so repeatedly, and that we don't learn about the clitoris. I mean, that's mm-hmm. bad priorities. It sucks. Mm-hmm.
And, like, we would revolutionize people's sex lives if we just taught, like, extremely basic pleasure-based anatomy.
Yep.
Like, if we literally, like, had a diagram with a couple arrows and were like, these places, hella clusters of nerve endings. We would revolutionize so many people's sex lives, which is absurd that it is, like, that little tiny bit of information. But there's so much more we could be teaching, but...
Masturbation, too. I mean, people are always so obsessed with how on the right about how, like, if we expand sex education to be more pleasure focused, then more kids will have sex. I don't necessarily think that that's the case. And I think that research has been done on this, which I haven't looked at in a while. But if you don't want them to be having a lot of sex, you could teach them about masturbation. And I think mm-hmm. that'll help with that significantly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think that's a lot of answers to that question. I think we're good.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know if I want to answer the spanking question that I myself wrote.
I mean, yeah. We
could skip it. Yeah, some of these are a bit heavy. I wrote them like 2 hours ago. Okay. This listener says, I think my gay uncle might be kinky and non-monogamous like me, and I'd love to connect with him about that, but I don't know how to bring it up. You could do the really easy thing and wear pins, buttons, that kind of thing that mm-hmm. are like kink flags or whatever. What do you think about this?
I often, if I want to bring things up, we've talked about like talking about it in the third party, like talking about it, pointing it out on TV if you see a thing or whatever. It's also really easy to just know certain lingo that you shouldn't know, right? Like, these are both communities that have some, like, pretty insular jargon. You can
My brain is filling with examples right now.
Right, like, you can very easily make a joke about anything, like, look for opportunities when you're spending time with this person and make a joke that betrays just a little bit of extra knowledge about kink or just like a little bit of extra knowledge about polyamory, right? Like, I don't know, watch a show where like two characters aren't explicitly dating, but be like, they're definitely metamors though, right? Like they're those two, this is like, they're not saying this is poly, but this is definitely poly, right? Or like, you know, I don't know. There are so many things that you can just reveal that you have knowledge about without necessarily saying, these people are poly, right? You know, just like you and I, we're both, you and me do the thing, right? Like, you can just tiptoe into the water and be like, hi, I have this information. And like, I got a feeling you do too. And like, they may... You know, if your uncle wants to share that, may pick up on that and make a similar joke in the future or just make a comment to you or whatever. And you can kind of escalate that conversation. I use this metaphor all the time, but like going up a staircase, right? Each of you taking a step at a time so that no one is like yelling up or down the stairs. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of tiptoe your way into having that conversation if you don't want to like explicitly be like, hey, so I'm going to see my boyfriend at my meta, but I'll be back. Bye. Which like also totally works.
Yeah, these conversations can also come out sometimes just when you're talking about, like, what's going on with you, mm-hmm. Especially if you work in the field or if you go to a lot of events in the field. And also, news stories are always an interesting way to bring up stuff like this. You know, I remember when 50 Shades came out and became really popular, I found myself suddenly having a lot of kink conversations with people I'd never talked to about kink before because mm-hmm. it would just come up in conversation or we would see something about it while we were together. And I would have an opportunity to be like, you know, I really don't like those books because they have a really inaccurate, abusive portrayal of what kink is. Mm-hmm. And then if someone wants to discuss that further, they can ask a lot of questions there. And if they don't, they don't have to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just kind of open the doorway, and I think that's the best way to handle this as well.
Yep. But also, like, if he doesn't want to come out to you, that's okay, too. That has to be okay. And he might have his own reasons. I could definitely see if I had a niece or nephew who wanted to connect with me in this way about these things, I might be a little hesitant to come out to them because, you know, maybe you want to keep that stuff separate from your family life to some extent.
Right. And, like, I don't know how old you are. I'm assuming you are an adult. But if you are this person's niece or nephew, you may still be a little beeb to them. You may be like, I'm 22 and at all the parties, and they look at you and see like a 6-year-old and are like, you know what? I don't want to talk about what I do with my dick with. Like,
yeah, they've like seen you in diapers. It might not
exactly. And you're like, so have you ever been to the Skullfucker party? And they're like,
Okay, maybe one more before we wrap up.
Don't want to leave it on skull fucking anyway.
I want to go to the skull fucker party. Why it wasn't was a I Halloween invited?
Party that I saw a listing for, and it was just the most absurd title of a party that I could come up with in the 30 seconds it took me to get that sentence out.
Perfect. Yeah.
The reason it came to mind was because someone borrowed my laptop and typed S in the search bar and was like, excuse me. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm not going. Don't worry.
That reminds me, there was a period of time where if you typed the letter A in my internet search bar, what would come up is an archive of our own search for X-rated fan fiction about Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Amazing.
I had been to that webpage too many times. Okay, one more question. Kind of a similar theme, actually. I saw my older sister selling porn on ManyVids, and I didn't know she was doing that. Should I mention it to her? My first instinct is no.
No.
I don't think that there's much good that will come out of you mentioning it to her, other than potentially maybe her feeling, you know, slightly safer about doing that work within her own family dynamic and feeling like at least one person supports her and has her back on that. But I think that the surprise and perhaps embarrassment about that might not be worth potential benefits. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm going to point to everything I said about preempting your conversation of someone coming out as queer. Like, I see it all as the same shit. With the giant caveat that if you are looking, like, you stumble across your sister's many vids and, like, you notice some things that worry you that don't seem safe. She's using too much, like, accurate legal information. She is not, like, you notice that she's also doing full service stuff and not vetting well. Or, like, I don't know, things that, like, throw up red flags. Mm-hmm. And this is, 18, 19, 20, 22-year-old, like, younger sibling, maybe it's worth, like, broaching in and being like, hi, I'm a resource, and, like, maybe I can help you. If you are a person who can be helpful, right, maybe I can give you some tips. Maybe I know something about this. Like, that is the only time I would say it is helpful, but I would say you better be damn confident that you know more about this than she does if you're pulling that one, right?
Yeah.
You better also be in the industry or be real close with people in the industry that you can put her in contact with, or, like, you need to, like, have your shit in order if you're going to be pulling that. But, you know, if this is, like, a younger sibling and someone you want to help provide resources for, then it might be worth broaching that topic.
Yeah, and don't watch her porn.
No.
I mean, I'm sure that there are exceptions. It's a big world. I'm sure that there are people who would be okay with that. But I think in the vast majority of cases, please don't watch her porn. I could definitely understand being curious about it, but I just don't think you should watch it for a whole bunch of reasons.
And don't, like, extrapolate beliefs about her based on her porn. Right. Do not assume that she is into all these things. Do not assume that, like, the things she posts about betrays some, like, fucked up mental health thing. Like, it's real easy to read a lot into porn and, like, I don't know, make a lot of decisions about what you think it means about the person she is. But, like, it could be as easy as she got a custom and it sounded neat and interesting.
Yeah.
Right? Like, people make a lot of different kinds of content for a lot of different reasons. And you don't need to go down some, like, spirally rabbit hole thinking that you're learning all kinds of wild things about your family that, like, don't mean anything.
Yeah. I think as with the coming out as queer thing, the best thing you can do is establish firmly whenever it comes up that you are pro sex work and pro sex workers' rights and don't have a problem with it. Mm-hmm. And then maybe one day she'll come out to you on her own. But also, like, she doesn't have to. And I think you should just kind of forget that you saw it and move on with your life, which mm-hmm. isn't advice I would often give. But in this situation, that is what I think you should do.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay, well, if you have more questions along those lines, folks, about intersections between family and sex, relationships, kink, etc., we would mm-hmm. love to receive those, and maybe we'll end up doing another part, because I do have a few more that we didn't get to. So our email address for that is thedildorks@gmail.com. I have been Kate Sloan. You can read my blog at girlyjuice.net. You can pre-order my book at 101kinkythings.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram, and you can check out my other podcast. It's called Question Box. Where's your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find my writing and information about my workshops at BexTalkSex.com. I actually just booked my first workshop in, like, over a year at this point, I think. It's going to be on Thursday, July 15th at 7:30 p.m., and I'm going to be teaching banging blowjobs for all bodies online. So you can go to my website or my Twitter at BexTalkSex, or go to Eventbrite and search blowjobs, and I will come up, which I just makes me so happy. And you can get tickets there. I have a general admission and sliding scale option for folks who need a more accessible price point.
I want to give a testimonial. Yes. Here. I have seen you teach this class, I think, twice. Mm-hmm. And even as someone who works in this industry and has given a lot of blowjobs in my life, I always learn more things that I didn't know or hadn't thought of. So, yeah, if you're at all interested in improving your blowjob technique, I would highly suggest that you take this class.
Oh, thank you. So, like, every sex educator has a blowjob class, and there have been several times where I've been like, do I really need to teach a blowjob class? Like, there's so many other things I can do. And, like, on the one, yes, I do need an excuse to talk about blowjobs for 2.5 hours. That does sound quite fun. But also, yeah, the reason I keep teaching it is because I talk about trans folks in there. I talk about strap-ons. I talk about kink. And those are a lot of things that I have never seen come up in the great many other blowjob workshops I've seen, which is why I keep teaching it. And again, because it's a lot of fun and brings me great joy to talk about blowjobs for that long. So come join me for that.
I will put the link to that blowjob workshop in the show notes so folks can click on it there.
Oh, thank you. Together we are the Dildorks. You can find us at the Dildorks on Twitter and Instagram, and at thedildorks.com. You could also find us at patreon.com/thedildorks, where you can toss a couple of bucks our way and help us keep making this show what it is.
Thank you so much to Protodome, who did our theme song. Thank you to Amy, who did our logo. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye.
Bye.
I have a friend in high school. I don't know why I said that in present tense. I'm going to take that again.
Currently hanging out with high schoolers.
That's weird. That would be so weird.
Oh my God, there's so many children at my new job. It's so weird.
Yikes.
Yeah, that bit can come out, but, like, I manage so many 16 and 17-year-olds, and one of them looked at me and was like, what are you, like, 32? I was like, Excuse me. Like, I've never heard so much disdain in my life. They were like, ew. I was like,
they're basically like, what are you, 104?
Like, I know. I was like, what are they, like 32 or something? I was like,
weird.
Okay, anyway, sorry.
Okay. We'll be right back.